Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. And welcome to everyone joining us on Sky Sports On Demand as we look ahead to the final eight teams in the NFL playoffs, Jeff. This is really, really serious now. And that people often say this is the best weekend of the year because this is when the big boys, the number one and two seeds in each conference, enter the fray.
Yeah, and you know, it's all teams now are teams that you think have a legitimate opportunity to go to the Super Bowl. I think you could probably put Tennessee and maybe Jacksonville right now with the way the quarterback's playing at the bottom of that list, but certainly they're not without hope as they go forward.
This podcast is very simple. We're going to take four games. We are going to talk about four games, and we're going to make our picks for four games. And I am one game behind you, so I am going to let you at the end of each. Yeah, see, I need to pick an upset this week because if I fall two games behind, right, I need enough time to catch up, and then I need to win in the Super Bowl. So
just have a chance to win in the fourth quarter.
Exactly,
right?
That's all I want. That's all I want now. So
you and the Buffalo Bills.
Let's start with the Atlanta Falcons at the Philadelphia Eagles. What is a tough one to call, because if you look at the record of the Eagles, 13-3 during the regular season, and the Falcons, though, they've won seven of their last nine. And when you look at the Eagles, of course, so much changes when you take Carson Wentz out of this game and you put in Nick Foles at quarterback. Let's start there with the Eagles.
Well, you know what? It's interesting with Nick Foles, because Nick Foles is a guy that has a winning record as a starter in the league. He's thrown seven touchdown passes in a game in this league. But, you know, Neil, yesterday I spent some time looking at tape of his games at the end of the season after Wentz got hurt. And the thing that was striking to me about it is, with him, they don't push the ball down the field at all.
Right.
Just off the top of my head, I think his longest completion was like 30 yards.
Right.
And so when you look at that, you think about the speed that the Falcons have. Mm. I think he's going to have to hit some throws down the field.
He does have experience. 39 starts in the NFL. He's been a starter. If you look at who has the most touchdown passes in a single game in NFL history, Nick Foles is one of a few players that have seven in a game. So he has some pedigree there. But, Jeff, he kind of looked okay in the first game against the Giants and then really disappointing on Christmas Day. And then in Week 17, although he didn't play very much, before he made way for Nate Sudfeld, he was terrible. I mean, it is a worry, and therefore, are they leaning on that running back rotation? Because it has been a rotation.
Yeah, I think that running back rotation is going to feature Jay Ajayi this weekend.
Yeah, Jay had a big game for the Dolphins against the Falcons earlier in the year, 130-odd yards.
I think that his skill set is more suited to playing against that Falcon defense. And, you know, going back to Foles, Nick, I mean, when you look at Nick Foles in those games, and you take the Giants game, and he threw some touchdown passes. He was good in the red zone. I would say good in the red zone. There are a couple plays. One, the Giants blow a coverage in the red zone, and he throws to a wide open guy. He did manage to get the ball to Ertz. I think he feels real comfortable throwing the ball to Ertz, because you can see that's where he wants to go with the ball most of the time. But he's going to need Nelson Aguilar, and he's going to need Alshon Jeffrey to make plays outside for him. And not just in the red zone. They've got to be able to push the ball and get chunk plays in the passing game. And in every one of the games, Neil, when he got behind on the chains, when it was third and long, when it was second and long, he just did not look comfortable at all.
Here's the numbers that back up what you're saying, Jeff. So on deep passes this year, so passes that travel 20 yards or more in the air, Carson Wentz, Carson Wentz had 14.3% of their pass attempts were
down the field.
And Wentz had a rating of 100.2. Foles, that's down to 11.9. And he has a pass rating of 10.4. So there's a drop-off in the amount of times they're doing it.
And a huge drop
in terms of the productivity of it.
Yeah, and that's where I think when you look at the game and just looking at it from a coaching standpoint, the Falcons are going to challenge outside, and they're going to try and make him throw the ball down the field. I think for them to have success, obviously they got to run the ball and they got to use play action on first down, throw the ball to Ertz in the flat, do some of that stuff. Because if they get off schedule, it's going to get ugly. And, you know, right now that Falcon defense is playing with a lot of swagger and a lot of confidence.
We'll talk more about the Falcons in a second. Let's finish up with the Eagles then. So we know the running game is going to be a key as well. But on defense, surely they have to have a huge game. It has been a very good defense this year. Fletcher Cox is all kind of bent out of shape that no one's respecting the Eagles and hasn't done all year. I think we respected them when Carson Wentz was in there, but obviously we have concerns since then. But we're about to find out if this is a strong team across the board or the importance of the quarterback position, especially it's still going to – what Nick Foles does will stress that defense, his own defense.
Yeah, it will. And, you know, they're going to have to play a lot of plays. That's what you worry about with them. They've got a good defense, Neil. You know, you talked about Fletcher Cox. Obviously, he's one of the best in the league. I think Brabham at linebacker is a good player, and then you got Malcolm Jenkins in the secondary, and you know, so you got players. But the question is, again, when you look at them, you even go back to the Raider game, their corners are real aggressive, and I'm sure we're going to see double moves outside against those corners trying to get big plays off a single high, because they're going to have to play a lot of single high to get the box numbers that they need to stop the run.
Falcons are a dome team. They had to go outside last week, but it was in L.A. That's not really going outside and being challenged by the weather, is it? I don't know if it's going to be freezing cold what the weather is in Philadelphia at the moment, but are the Falcons built to travel when you look at somebody like Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman? I'm thinking of the way Freeman ran the ball second half last week.
Well, you made in the production meetings yesterday at Sky, you made a couple points about Freeman finishing runs and what you know, for the listeners that don't understand what that means, it's finishing runs is a guy is trying to punish the tackler at the end of the run, always trying to finish falling forward with his pads vertical into the defense. And that's what they're going to need out of him. I think Tevin's going to have to be that big play to the edge guy that, you know, and maybe some stuff out of the backfield. The weather is the eight ball in this thing. You know, you just don't know. Philadelphia can be windy. It can be really cold at this time of year. And again, you're talking about a Falcon team that's from the South, number one. Number two plays indoors. So I think that will play into it.
Both these teams have running backs who like to finish their runs. Jay Ajayi is that way as well, isn't he? Devontae Freeman is. I think Freeman, maybe, Jeff, if you get really technical, does Freeman get a little bit lower at the end of his runs?
Well, I think
Jay's sometimes been running a bit high. Or?
I think he's naturally lower. I think he's a little shorter than, you know, his pads are down naturally. Jay has a tendency to be more upright. But, you know, even though Jay's, quote, an upright runner, he is a violent runner. He is a hard guy to tackle. And, you know, I think with him and Blunt and then Clement, they've got a great opportunity to just keep rolling fresh bodies at, you know, the Falcons. Again, you got to remember, too, now, this is a pretty good offensive line that Philly's going to roll out there. I mean, you know, you're talking about Lane Johnson at right tackle and all the way through Vitae and all those guys all the way through that offensive line, Sam Malo, they're good football players.
Who do you like in this one?
You know what? I just really think that, you know, Falcons are built to go up there and make the upset. And the more I studied Foles, the more I really worried about his ability to make enough plays from the pocket to win the game. So I'm going to take the Falcons in an upset.
It's not an upset, though. They're the favorites.
Well, I mean, that's when you're talking about...
Yeah, with one number one seat.
So number one seat.
I mean, this is interesting, though, to maybe just touch on why Fletcher Cox and those guys feel disrespected. For the first time since the NFL expanded its playoff field in 1990, this is the first time a number one seed has entered the divisional round, as they do. We always see the big teams come in favored, and they're an underdog. They're a six-point underdog.
The only question I would have about that, is this the first time? I don't know this. You probably know this way better than I, but... Is this the first time when a starting quarterback on a number one seed was out for the opening round?
I don't know if they were a number one. So I'm thinking like Jeff Hostetler when he took over for Phil Sims, you know, that 1990 season. I can't remember if they were a number one seed. But yeah, it's rare.
Yeah,
that's
it's
why
really, really
that's
rare.
Why they're and not favored. But I know what you mean when you say upset, because the number one seed, they're at home.
They've got a 13-3 record at home and all that. You've had the bye. I mean, you should be the favorite in this thing. And I think that's kind of Vegas's who sets the line. Their answer to, you know, the quarterback situation right now in Philadelphia.
I need to make a different pick to you, but I think Atlanta win this game as well. I'm trying to work out where else you're going to go. I think it's going to come down to the bottom one. I'm going to go Atlanta to win as well. Let's move on to the second game. Remember, we've got all four games live on Sky Sports this weekend. Every playoff game live on Sky Sports, all the way up to Super Bowl 52, which will be at in Minnesota. So the second game, Saturday night into Sunday morning, is the Tennessee Titans at the New England Patriots. Jeff, I saw a rather naughty tweet on Twitter earlier this week, which was a graphic that was made up, and it said, keys to a Patriots victory on Saturday night. And I clicked on it and opened it up, and it just had one bullet point, and it said, turn up.
I don't know if it's going to be that easy, but, you know, Tennessee, give Tennessee credit, because first of all, they go on the road into Arrowhead, which is a tough place to play against a team that was playing extremely well, and they find a way to win the football game. So they're going to need to do that exact same thing. It's going to have to be like, you know, here we go again for those guys. Marcus is going to have to play. Mm. He's going to have to make a lot of plays. They're going to have to run the ball. They showed that they could do that, particularly in the second half last week. I just don't know if defensively, you know, against Brady at home, it's a tall, tall task.
We talked earlier in this week about the way Tennessee controlled the clock last time and how that is a tried and trusted method. And I know it's almost sounds cliche-like, but if you keep Brady on the bench, you know, they ran for 202 yards last week. On the road now, it's got to be the formula, hasn't it?
It has to be. And I think
against the 29th-ranked defense in terms of yards.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it really, as long as – and I think this will really be a test for the Titans and their ability to play what we refer to in the business as complementary football. Mm. So, for example, you know, you talk about all your situations in a football game. You know, red zone, coming out, going in – third and short, third and long, first and 10, P and 10, all those things. But when you get down to really to it in a game like this, this is a game where the Titans, in my opinion, as long as they're within one score or tied or ahead, they've got to treat it like four-minute football.
Right.
They've got to use every second on the clock. They've got to do everything that they possibly can to maintain the ball and keep Brady on the sidelines. And, you know, that's hard to do sometimes, harder to do really in pro football than it is in college football because the offensive coordinator always wants to be, you know, out there, you know, I won't say showing off, but, you know, sometimes they don't get it. They think that, like, okay, well, we got to go fast and all that. But you can't do that to your defense, number one, and you got to make sure that, you know, the guy who's going to walk into the Hall of Fame when his career's over on the other sideline is standing on the sideline watching the game.
Whenever the Patriots have been knocked out of the playoffs, they've had that kind of almost not been able to get into a rhythm offensively. For exactly what Tennessee will try to do, but they've also had a Tom Brady who's been harried and harassed and knocked about a bit in those games. Tennessee found the pass rush in the second half against Kansas City. It is a pass rush that comes from a lot of different places, and can they do that against New England? It's certainly a key, isn't it, Jeff?
Yeah, I think
pressure Brady always is.
What LeBeau's going to have to do is going to have to be, like he was last week, he's going to have to be inventive a little bit in how he gets pressure there. Now, he's a zone blitz guy. They're not a man team. That's why they don't give up a lot of big throws. But you got to understand, too, that the Patriots are what kind of throwing team? Primarily an underneath rhythm throwing team. Mm. When you zone blitz, you give up one zone underneath. So, for example, if you're playing two deep, you've got five under two deep guys. Well, four men rush, and then but if you zone blitz and now you bring a fifth rusher, it has to come out of that underneath element.
Brady's going to throw it right where you come from, probably.
Exactly. That's the thing. He's hard to fool. The guy's been at this for a long time. So it's not like you haven't seen it. And then you go back and, again, you study and you see that when LeBeau was at Pittsburgh, Brady had great success against him. And so I think he's going to have to come up with some things that Tom hasn't seen.
We talked in our production meeting at Sky Sports yesterday about when we when we set up this game, talking about the dominance of the New England Patriots, and we both kind of were like, well, where do you want to start? Well, here's a good place to start. They've got a first-round bye for the eighth straight season. You kind of think about how hard it is to get into the playoffs and then to get the first-round bye. If they win this game, they're in a seventh consecutive AFC championship game.
Yeah, because you know most most teams go into the season saying, okay, we got to get 10. If we can get 10,
right,
we're in the playoffs. Yeah. Or we should be in the playoffs most years. Their approach is they don't look at it that way. They just do their thing. Mm. And you know that whole mantra, do your job and keep improving during the course of the season. Remember, this is a team that we talked about after week four that was 2-2 and had given up 300 yards passing to every quarterback they'd faced, and they, you know, everybody was willing to write them off. But I'm gonna tell you something: they just keep getting better, and you know now they're playing good defense.
But now the coach doesn't like the owner, the quarterback doesn't like
the coach.
Yeah, you're worried about that. I mean, we get these great research notes, and Jeff, there's a graphic here which is Patriots in motivation game. So you mentioned it in our show on Sunday. They've dealt with Deflategate, Spygate, Ryan Clark telling Tom Brady he was seeing ghosts, Houston trash talking the Patriots. There's a bunch of them. There's what, 14 or 15 examples here of distractions, controversy, and the Patriots have won every game after them. There's no trouble in paradise.
I mean there may be, but the reality
not
of
enough
it
to
is,
make them
yeah,
lose.
if you said to me and we had a big discussion about this, I would not be surprised in the least if this wasn't part of a grander scheme.
Belichick may be the mole, right?
Yeah, grander scheme psychologically to get his team focused. And you know, he's already shown that he's a master at the psychological game inside the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, you listen to Tom Brady's comments about it, and they're, you know, like they came from the quote machine.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, you know, again, it's just the reality of pro sports as you're dealing with big egos, big money. Everybody wants to have their say. Everybody wants their agenda advanced. Somehow this group has been able to, you know, I guess silence all that stuff, all that outside noise. I mean, look at what was it 3 weeks ago? We're watching Brady just go after Josh McDaniels verbally on the sideline. So yeah, I mean, he's competitive. He's going to say things. So, but I think they just understand it's all part of the whole deal.
As the Patriots begin their playoff run, Jeff, I mean, we've talked about New England so much all season. We know their strengths. They rotate the running backs. It's a different running back every week. They've got Gronk and Brandon Cooks in the passing game. They've got Tom Brady, of course. If there is any concern as they're going into this playoff run now, chasing another Super Bowl, what would it be that would trip this team up?
To me, Neil, when you look at them, where are they deficient? It's in pass rush, in their ability to rush four guys and put adequate pressure on
all eyes on James Harrison. Then,
yeah, and again, there is that is that not a Belichickian move, just like he did with, you know, with Michael Floyd last year. He goes out and gets a guy who somebody else had cut loose, who he thinks might be able to help in an area where they need help. And then, doggone if James Harrison, and you can say they're garbage sacks at the end of the game and all that stuff, but they're sacks. Mm. And so now, a guy who's maybe played 60 plays all season has three sacks, and you say, can he inject some life into that pass rush? Well, that's what he's going to walk into the Hall of Fame for doing.
I think it's going to take more than a Mariota miracle. I'm going to go New England to win this one.
I agree with you.
All right, that's why I went first, because I knew you were going.
What'll be interesting, let me get your take on this one real quick before we go. Does that mean that we're looking at a coaching change in Tennessee?
I still think he's on the hot seat. The Titans came out after, because obviously there was a lot of speculation around the Kansas City game, and then the Titans came out and they made a statement saying, moving forward, in order to avoid distractions, Mike Mularkey is our coach. And it didn't say anything about the 2018 season.
Hardly a ringing endorsement.
No, it just said, moving forward. I think if they lose this one 45-10, I don't think he's safe. What do you think?
Well, I think obviously there's trouble there.
Yeah.
And anytime he comes out, and this was really surprising to me, when he comes out and addresses it the way he addressed it, you know, it's about my family and, you know, I think the better thing in that situation for Mike would have been just let it go. I mean, just don't even address it.
Yeah.
We're on to, you know, New England. We got a lot on our plates right now. And then and let the chips fall. Because you're not going to win in the court of public opinion.
My thing with that press release that came from the Titans, that goes through a lot of sets of eyes before it becomes in the public domain. So at some point, somebody might have suggested that they put 2018 season and beyond on there, but they didn't. You know, just moving forward to avoid distractions. In other words, so you don't talk about it this week because we're off to play the Patriots.
But see, when you do it that way, what do we talk about? We talk about the fact that it's not a ringing endorsement, and
he opens the door for more speculation. Yeah. Let's move on to Sunday's games then. We're on air on 5:30 p.m. on Sky Sports with what could be a bruising, intriguing matchup. The Jacksonville Jaguars, champions of the AFC South, at the Pittsburgh Steelers. They met in Week 5 in Pittsburgh, and we know Jacksonville won that game 30-9. They picked off Big Ben 5 times. Jeff, just before we started recording this edition of Inside the Huddle, you said it's not quite the same Pittsburgh team. I mean, no teams are ever the same from Week 5 to playoffs anyway, but can you see Jacksonville? I mean, five interceptions is pretty fluky anyway. So, but can you see them dominating on defense?
Yeah, 5 interceptions is I mean, and you look at. I went back and I looked at them on tape, and I said, okay, and we're gonna show the viewers. Mm. There were some balls that were just, you know, bad day at the office kind of things. I mean, the linebackers got Le'Veon Bell in coverage in man-to-man. Le'Veon Bell doesn't get out. He gets hung up chipping in Ngakoue. And so the linebacker's standing there, and the slant's thrown right, you know, right behind him. A guy tips the ball, and it goes to the linebacker. He runs it in for a touchdown. You know, Barry Church is underneath where a safety should never be on a deep ball, and the ball gets tipped. He catches it, and he runs it back. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, they made their plays. I'm not disrespecting them. But what I saw out of the Steelers was – really, I think they underestimated Jacksonville's speed on defense, and ability on defense, and everything that they did on offense that day was so vanilla. And just, you know, I think that they're going to be – what I think that you'll see from the Steelers in the game is you're going to get a lot of compressed formations. You're going to get a lot of motion. You're going to get a lot of ways to get, you know, AB free.
Right.
Juju Schuster, we didn't even know who he was at that point in the season. So I think it is a different Steeler team.
I think even if Pittsburgh have another even if they have a bad day or they have an average day, you could see that Pittsburgh team on a bad day getting to 17 points, Jeff. And then I worry, can Jacksonville get there? Because the offense has dried up completely. The last two games, I mean, you can look at what they did against the San Francisco 49ers with turnovers, but they at least scored some points. But against Tennessee, they didn't get an offensive touchdown, and they had just one offensive touchdown last week.
Yeah, offensively, they have not played well. And, you know, it's kind of concerning, if obviously majorly concerning if you're a Jags fan, but just as a fan of the game, you know, I never want to see a guy struggle because, you know, especially the quarterback, because they take so much criticism.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, I thought Bortles had kind of turned the corner a little bit.
We all did. Yeah, that was a disappointment.
The Seattle game, I thought, gosh, look at him, you know.
Yeah.
And then I go back and you look at the game last weekend, and really, against Buffalo, he made one throw that I can remember. In the start of the second half, a play action in cut at about 12 or 14 yards. That was really the only throw that he made. He was back to being that guy who looked like he had no confidence in his accuracy. He babying the ball. I mean, he throwing the balls in the dirt that were completions that a small college quarterback should make.
We've seen teams over the years that have struggled at quarterback and won with strong defense. I mean, when Denver won it a few years ago, Peyton Manning had a quarterback rating of 67.9 that season. But Peyton got them into good situations, and they ran the ball quite well. I think back to Trent Dilfer when the Ravens. I feel like they had enough offense then. But the Bortles effect is so damaging at the moment that it's affecting everything. Leonard Fournette last week, 21 carries, 57 yards, Jeff.
You know what? It's funny you brought up Dilfer, because I did a little study on Dilfer last week as we were preparing for Alex Smith and about what a real game manager is. Dilfer played in playoff games both with the Bucks and with the Ravens when they won the Super Bowl. The most points any of his defenses in any of his playoff games gave up was 21, and they lost that game.
Right.
So that's what's concerning about the situation in Jacksonville. Pittsburgh has so many weapons, as you said, Neil. You can't even imagine them being held to 21 points.
Right.
Now, 28, 25, 24, somewhere in there. Yeah, I can see that. But if they don't score 17 points, I mean, is that enough to win?
So how did Jacksonville win? They obviously, turnovers mean you steal possessions.
I mean,
we've seen them run three fake punts this season successfully.
Something like that. They're going to have to play that way. And, I mean, you look at the last time they played, and you got a 90-some or 60-some, whatever. It was a long,
long long touchdown run. Fournette,
Fournette gets out of there and outruns everybody.
Couple
and then
of
you got
sixes.
Two defensive scores. So there's 21 points right there. And you take those 21 away, you're talking about a totally different football game. So I just, you know, you look at it, and Doug Marrone, bless his heart, you know, is totally honest about it. He goes, concerned about my offense? Hell, I won't say what he said, but yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. I'd be stupid not to be.
So the Steelers lost by 21 in week five. In playoff rematches where the team has lost by 20 or more points, when they've tried to get revenge, that team trying to get revenge is 0-6.
Are you trying to get me to
trying
take
to get you to take the Jags? You know you want to.
It ain't happening. It's not happening. No, what and
you
again,
expecting
and, you know,
from,
and it's funny. It's funny because I'm not a Steeler guy. Like I'm not. I don't think they've gotten out of their talent over the years what they should.
Yep.
But I just look at them, and you go at every spot. Now, Shazier's out. That's a difference from the last time they played. Can they continue to run the football at the level that they need to run the football? Well, think about what the Steelers did, and this is where I got to give credit. And when they played New England a couple weeks ago, they said, we're playing man-to-man, and we're not going to play all that soft zone and let Brady just go up and down the field on us. And they actually played pretty well. So they've shown that they will adapt defensively. I think that's what they've got to do again. They've got to press up, play, and make Bortles, if he's going to complete throws, everything's got to be a contested throw.
Will you tip your hand and tell me who you're picking in the Saints-Vikings game? Because that'll affect how I pick this one, or no? You're going to play it by the rules.
I'm going to play by the rules, man. You know I can't deviate from.
I don't want to go against.
You
the
know me.
I think you're going to pick
you
the Vikings.
You know me, Neil. I never deviate from.
Yeah. I think you're going to pick the Vikings, and I don't want to go against Kyle Rudolph and Harrison Smith, but I might have to. So I'm going to pick Pittsburgh as well. Just on the Steelers, just as you're going Steelers, right? So we're both going Steelers. Just on the Steelers, what do we expect from Antonio Brown? So.
I think he'll be healthy, you know.
Yeah. They'd love to get him out. They get a lead and get him on the bench.
Get him off the field. Yeah. But you know, again, the thing about the Steelers now, as opposed to the Steelers when we looked at them, you know, in this game, you know, like I said, Juju Schuster they didn't even know what they had at that point with that kid, and you know, Martavis Bryant's back. Jesse James is playing at a higher level. Mm. And then structurally, they were different. They were playing with a fullback. They were playing with two tight ends. They were doing all that stuff that I don't think you can do against Jacksonville, because I think this plays into their hands.
Let's go on to the last game, and it's the repeat of the Week 1 Monday Night Football opener, the Minnesota Vikings hosting the New Orleans Saints. So the Vikings went 13-3. The Saints, with their win last week, have moved to 12-5 on the season. But again, this is different because this was a career night for Sam Bradford when they met in week one. Adrian Peterson was complaining he wasn't getting the ball enough for the Saints, so it's all changed. The Saints last week, let's start with the Saints, had Kamara and Ingram shut down, and Drew Brees reminded us that he can still win it on his own if he needs to. So in my mind, we've got a complete offense going up against a complete defense that's very, very good with Pro Bowlers on all three levels. There's a really good matchup to start.
Well, and that's the essence of pro football. It's about matchups,
yeah.
Right? And the coaching responsibility is to create favorable matchups. So let's look at how you would do it if you're Mike Zimmer. Number one, you're going to take Xavier Rhodes and you're going to put him on Michael Thomas and you're going to let him travel all over the field.
Big physical corner on a big receiver.
Yeah, and I think that, and you know, that's one of those ones. Thomas will get a few catches, but they're going to be tough catches. Now, that allows you to do what? Harrison Smith, Andrew Zendejo can drop down into the box. And, you know, this is a – they're a team that's a little bit unique is that they're a team that will blitz the safeties to stop the run, to try and create – not just to give up a 2 or 3 yard rush, but to actually create a negative play in the run game. Now, what's going to be interesting to me is how are they going to deal with Ted Ginn and his ability to get vertical.
Yeah.
Where I see a little bit of a difference – compared to last week was I didn't think Julius Peppers was an impact guy like I think Everson's going to be Griffin in this game.
Let's talk about the pass rush there of the Vikings, because we know that Mike Zimmer likes to do those blitzes right up the middle as well, and you've got Everson Griffin, you've got Linville Joseph, you've got enough pass rush there without the blitzes. But if they get Drew Brees off his spot, we saw that when he threw the 4th-and-2 play. He's not as comfortable when he's when he's rolling out. And Andres Pete, who's been a very good guard for the Saints, broke his leg last week. So there's an advantage, right, to the Vikings?
Yeah, I'm actually – this is going to be interesting to see, because I don't – if Pete obviously can't play because he's got a broken leg, I think it's a non-weight-bearing bone, though.
Right.
Which means maybe later in the playoffs or Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Josh Laribas, who was one of our kids at SMU, was drafted by the Redskins and started some games with the Redskins, kind of been a swing player, has played as a fill-in at guard this year for the Saints and done pretty well. But again, you're now talking about Linville Joseph on the other side of it.
Yeah.
So if he does play, he's going to have to play well. I think you made a great point about Brees. And when you look at Brees, the balls that he wants to throw are almost balls that are out of necessity have to be thrown from the pocket.
Yep.
They're vertical balls. So when you start moving, what you end up doing is you cut half of the field off for him. So by getting him off, as you say, getting him off his spot and making him roll, he's not going to hurt you with his
feet. And he can't move the safety like you showed on the touchscreen. He moves the safety with his
eyes. And that's what I mean. Like, all of those kinds of things require him to have a clean pocket to throw from. So, again, if you're Zim and his staff right now, I'm sure they're looking at ways that through games and various, you know, cover me's that they can let those edge pass rushers really go. And the inside guys have just got to get pushed. I see them getting in a lot of that double A gap look where they walk the linebackers up and bring guys and drop guys and try and create, you know, pressure on those guards.
We talked in our production meeting yesterday, Jeff. It's so often the obvious point is the Saints offense against the Vikings defense, strength against strength. So often games like that are decided by the other units.
Yeah.
So the Vikings offense against the Saints defense. Saints defense is an improving unit. Case Keenum, Jeff, I'm going to say, is probably one of the best football stories since Kurt Warner.
I think so.
As a quarterback.
And again, just at one point during the season, we're ready to anoint him. And then what happens? Mm. He goes out and has a clunker. Right. Mm. So he's got that in him, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is a guy that you look at him, he holds an all-time record for pass completions in a game in a row. Mm. And has also been a guy that next week came over here to London, threw 4 interceptions in a game. So you just don't know what you're going to get. If he doesn't turn it over, I think that's going to be critical for winning this game for Minnesota.
We were talking about the Vikings' weapons yesterday, and we were talking about Thielen and Diggs and Latavius Murray. And you kind of banged the table and told us off in the production. We said, we're doing what everyone else does. We're not talking Kyle Rudolph. He could be a difference maker
absolutely,
in this game.
Because think about it now. Marshawn Lattimore is going to take one of them guys away.
Right.
Right now, who they choose is going to be interesting to see. Crawley, like, if I was doing it right now, just, you know, again, without having the access to all the tape that they have, I put Lattimore on Thielen and let Crawley take Diggs. But the guy that's who do you put on a tight end who's 6'5" and he can run 4.6 and he's got great catching range and he's physical And, you know, again, I think Kyle Rudolph is unbelievably underrated in the National Football League.
I'm with you. Jeff, who are you picking for this one?
Whoa. You know what? You look at the two teams, you know, Saints have a Pro Bowl punter, you know, their special teams have gotten better. They weren't very good earlier in the year. They hired Mike Westhoff, and he got them cleaned up a little bit. But I just think to go into Minnesota after they've had a week off and in front of that crowd, and the one good thing for New Orleans, it's an indoor game,
you
know, because they're a dome team. So, but I got to take Minnesota. I just think they're going to be our Super Bowl champion, to be honest.
If they advance, that would be the first time a Super Bowl a team trying to make the Super Bowl in its own stadium has reached the conference championships. Amazingly, they've never got past the divisional round before. So you're going Minnesota. I'm a game behind.
Are you going to the Houdats?
Well, I don't want to. I think Minnesota are going to win this game. But Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara, and Mark Ingram. I've just put that the wrong way around. I've given you. I'm going to have to go the New Orleans Saints because I can't just pick.
Yeah, but
I can't go the opposite of you in the championship game.
Just keep it close until the fourth quarter. It's not the fourth quarter yet. Don't.
No, but if
you have to be pushing your bets. See, you're like that. You're like you went. You know what? You went. Oh man, you went full Los Angeles Rams on me right there.
Well, I'm just.
Huh? I kept the ball away from you. I ran the ball. Had an 8-minute possession.
And I got desperate. I got desperate. You played an absolute blinder, Jeff, and I've been suckered in. That's why you're a coach and I'm a pen pushing journo. Listen, we are out of time on this second edition of Inside the Huddle. So we thank you for joining us. Enjoy all of the playoff games this weekend. We're on air at Sky Sports. 9 o'clock on Saturday night, 5:30 p.m. on Sunday. Until then, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.